Joining me right now on Caramel Jazz and Blues Radio is what we wait for every week on Tuesdays around 5:14 p.m. at the Live with the Jazz Cat show. But first, I wanted to let you know that if you haven't been to the website yet, I mean the Jazz Cat's website, then you might be missing out on quite a bit of information and a lot of enjoyment. If you're a music fan, you don't even have to be a jazz fan, but we like you to be a jazz fan or a jazz aficionado, but it is www.thejazzcat.net, so it can't be any simpler than that, thejazzcat.net, and you need to go there and check it out because you will find archived there a number of great interviews. And if you're like me, it's nice to hear the music, but it really is even nicer for me to know what is behind the music. These are fascinating, intelligent individuals with a lot to say. They say it through their instrument most of the time, but when you hear them speak, it's even more important when they play the music and they compose it to know what it's all about. So, again, joining us right now from Southern California, I believe, is the Jazz Cat himself with his guest today, and the Live with the Jazz Cat show is on the air. Leroy?
Hey, Gary, how you doing?
All right, real good, as usual, and nice to have you on.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, in that opening speech there, you mentioned two things. You mentioned something about hear the music and a part of the music, and man, every time you turn jazz on, that is what you're going to hear when you hear Mr. Richard Davis, who is with me today. Hello, Richard.
Hi, Leroy.
How are you?
Well, I'm fine.
Beautiful, beautiful.
I'm just wondering if you got those CDs I sent out there.
You know, I think they did get them at the radio station.
Okay.
I haven't gotten my copies yet, but I'm sure they're on the way.
Sure.
Well, you know, as an educator of European classical music and jazz, one being a strict attention to detail and the other, you know, feeling of personal inspiration, how do you introduce those idioms and have each genre draw from one another when you're teaching your students?
Well, I can say that I look at it as one and the same. I look at it as music, and one discipline begets the other, or vice versa. And if you're focusing on one particular music, whether it's European, classical, or jazz, you're focusing on a discipline. So I was brought up and trained to look at them as one and the same. They both demand certain ingredients that the other doesn't. To say it in short, the European classical music is more or less interpretive, and the jazz music is more or less improvisational. So, to cross over, improvisation means that you're crossing over into something that's interpretive. And a person who's more involved with interpretive music is improvising a thought process, which is not creating another line, but it's interpretation of a thought process. So there's some similarities there.
Oh, beautiful.
But the music can definitely be discerned by how it is performed, because just for instance, Louis Armstrong started what they call a swing eighth. The swing eighths are looking at two eighth notes, but interpreting them to sound different in rhythm.
You know, that's really interesting, that your philosophy on that. I've actually never thought about it that way.
I hadn't thought about it until today. Just now.
Well, you know, it seems as though we as musicians and artists always facilitate the love quotient in life. You know, with all of the noise that exists in everyone's lives day to day, the music continues to constantly remind people to love and to be in love. And I think you get that especially when, you know, you hear the bow? Why don't you think more bass players incorporate the bow when they're playing?
Well, I can't answer that question because I've never asked any bass players why they use the bow. I was brought up using the bow, and I was encouraged to use the bow by Eric Dolphy Moore. He said you should play the bow more. And if you know the name Bill Lee, do you know that name?
Absolutely.
Well, he said, Richard, you have a golden arm, he called it. He said you should use it more. So of late, I've been recording a lot with bold melodies, and you mentioned the word love, and I have what I call a love suite, a list of songs that have the word love in them.
Oh.
And even last night, I was listening to a DVD of Romeo and Juliet, and there was a theme going on in that movie for the whole time. It's in, and I can't even think of the melody at the moment, but it's a melody that we all know. If I would sing it, you would recognize it.
Right.
And so I thought about incorporating that in my repertoire, because Romeo and Juliet, that's just a dynamic love story.
Right.
That fit all centuries, you know. So I use the bow because I like imitating the singing voice. And that's the closest I get to the singing voice is with the bow. I style my bow technique after hearing singers. And a lot of bass players are using the bow, and a lot of them, most of them, are not using the bow. But that's their own choice.
Yeah. Well, it's so beautifully emotional when you hear it, you know, and it always reminds me of, like I said, the love quotient.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you also mentioned Bill Lee. There was something that you did called the New York Bass Violin Choir on Strata East back in the day that had a number of bass players on there. You, Ron Carter, and I know that Bill Lee, I think he's the one who orchestrated that.
Oh, yeah, he's the one. That was his whole idea. The whole thing was his baby. And we did music related to Negro folklore, like an opera. So that was a thing that Bill Lee started. And I think that was the first of that type of ensemble with all these bass players playing like a choir.
Right.
There was Milt Hinton, Percy Heath, Sam Jones, Michael Fleming.
Milt Hinton.
And a slew of bass players, man.
Yeah, man, that's a great
one. We all rehearsed at Bill's house. That's how I remember when Spike Lee was born.
Uh-huh. You were there.
Yeah.
Well, today we are talking with Mr. Richard Davis right here on the show, live with the Jazz Cat on 1410 AM, KRML, Jazz and Blues Radio. Well, there are two types of education in this music, the classroom and the bandstand. And the latter for you is so rich with the free-thinking surroundings that you've been immersed in with cats like, I'm just going to name a few because there's so many of them, Eric Dolphy, Booker Little, Mal Waldron, Andrew Hill, Archie Shepp, Jane Cortez, Bobby Bradford, Elvin Jones, Charles Lloyd, and many, many, many others. Out of all that energetic creativity in existence, what do you feel has blossomed here in the 21st century that is directly correlated to the spirit of that music?
Well, that's a difficult question for me because after John Coltrane, I've heard nothing new. And I equate that to the fact that he had covered it on such a global level that he trusts on everything imaginable through his zeal to experience different musics. And I honestly can say that I have not heard anything else that comes off as different, progressive in a sense of going somewhere else with the music. I just haven't seen it.
Well, you know, John was a genius.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to follow that up, you know, and he was also connected very spiritually, as a few artists are. But I think that part of that improvisation just comes down to you, so.
Yeah, me too. I would like to hear it, but I think he said it all.
Yeah.
And I think people might be a little shy of trying to find something that he hadn't found already, that he had found already.
Well, you know, now you're a professor, And one of your residency topics in the curriculum that you teach is protest songs in the jazz experience. And the word protest reminds me, it's just an effort to try to get people to listen. You know, why do you think that jazz and classical music, for that matter, still in 2008 have to force feed that beauty on America to try to make them listen?
Well, to me, it gets to be a racial thing. The country is geared off of copying European classical music. The black people brought in another music and an entirely different art form. So if you don't have 100% respect for the black person, you don't have respect for their music. Because if they're considered to be no good, anything they're doing is no good. And all through history, all the good things that black people have done have not been noted and put into the general school curriculum. Because there's a division in America on skin color. And some people of white skin have no idea what people of black skin were doing because it's not part of the curriculum. Therefore, they get a falsified and unbalanced education. So it continues through the generations that they do not see the values in the black music. But that's not just music. The first cataract operation was done in Africa. The first anesthesiology episode in operation was done in Africa. The blood plasma, which was done by Charles Drew, nobody knows who he is. He has a name that is not African. They might see a name and think he's European, of a European background. But he was the one, and people give him credit for us winning, Americans winning the Second World War, because they had a chance to store blood and for the soldiers who were wounded during that time. But that's not put out enough in the history books to make it known that we have validity in being able to do something.
Well, it's so interesting that as powerful as these things, and especially the music, is that we've contributed to and we've developed, that it's still not taken as something that we should be studying or learn more about or even love, just like we do other music.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's noted by many universities. For instance, Oliver Nelson, when he was going to school at Washington University in St. Louis, they looked down on what he was doing as a jazz artist. If I remember, they didn't honor him and accept what he was doing until he got world famous. Then, you know, our hometown guy does good.
Well, you know, sometimes people are very slow to learn as well.
Yeah.
Well, it's a blessing that major universities have recognized the importance of jazz and its historical substance and have appointed great purveyors of the music, such as yourself, for guidance. Mm-hmm. But is that just for the music students at those universities? And what other ways can we have the music exposed to youth so that by the time they reach collegiate status, it's already in the blood?
You know what is a safe way to present that, what you're talking about? And Spike Lee's aunt, Consuela, told me this. She doesn't talk about jazz because then jazz gives an abstract point of view and it makes people fearful of it because they can't do it. So she used the term creative music. And creative music, that name sounds like it covers any aspect of music as long as you're creating it from your own self. And that way, people don't feel threatened. They feel they have a chance to individualize and have a chance to do something which is mainly theirs. Then slowly you can introduce the different phases of music. Because, see, in Japan, that's how they started off. They start off a student who's going to play music with his own creation. And then after they feel confident and knowing that what they're doing is accepted, then they bring in the disciplines and show them how to use that. But first of all, they establish the student's self-esteem and confidence. We don't do that yet.
Yes, the trickery of creative music, which is jazz.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking today on Live with the Jazz Cat with Mr. Richard Davis, bass player extraordinaire, right here on 1410 AM KRML Jazz and Blues Radio on the Four Locals Only Show with Mr. Gary Hamada. Out of all the music that you've composed and performed, what have been, well, just tell me one of your fondest and most memorable experiences on stage when the music just took a life of its own.
Well, before you finish that question, I already had an answer because it comes back right back to John Coltrane. I was in Japan once, and we had exhausted ourselves in playing our repertoire, and the people were just all up in arms listening to the music. And they asked for encore after encore, and I couldn't think of anything else to play. And I looked at a friend of mine who was in the audience, who's Japanese, and I said, "How do you say a love supreme in Japanese?" And she gave me the translation. And we started vamping on this theme, A Love Supreme. And before the song was over, man, there were hordes of people crying, hordes of people dancing, hordes of people hugging each other. And I saw the effect of Love Supreme, I imagine 20 years after Coltrane had died. And it was one of the most exhilarating moments I've ever experienced. Anywhere. Well, that's the moment I remember.
Yeah, that just goes to show you that power of the music just still exists today and is still touching on people today.
And Love Supreme, I mean, how more supreme can you get?
Yeah.
You know?
That music is directly connected to the almighty powerful spirit above.
Exactly. I'd like to get a copy of the tape of this radio show, if you would.
Oh, you'll definitely have one, my friend.
Okay.
Well, one of the most beautiful philosophies of this music always has been each one, teach one. And not only do you do this, but there was a gentleman in Chicago who was quite influential in your audio perspective in regards to the music.
And who was that?
I thought it was Walter Henry Diet.
That's who it was.
Yes, him.
That's who it was. He taught me so much about life. And with the lessons of life, I became a better musician. He taught life more than music. Mm. Highly disciplined and just into the students, and that's why I invite students to come to my house today, because he invited me to come to his house every Saturday because I was asking questions that demanded more time to be answered. So I grew up thinking that in order to do that, the classroom does not end with the four walls in your room. And right now I teach basic life experiences in all the classes I teach. And I do not do anything but tell them about my experiences as a person, as a musician, and the experiences of others as musicians in their lives. And they just love it. Because it's straight down the... It's like, I think you said something about classroom and the bandstand.
Yes.
I'm teaching the bandstand, the backstage.
Well, you know, life experiences, creativity, and innovation, those are all a part of the music, and it's so nice that you present those to your students and to the people that you teach, and then later on let them know that they're almost synonymous with jazz.
That's it. They get it.
Yeah, that's good, man. Well, jazz music is global. You know, there are musicians from all over the world who've been influenced by this art form that we've developed. And as a result, we have a diversity of culture and spirit bringing new perspectives to this music all the time. What are some of the cultural aspects of the music that you've encountered that have been astounding?
Well, see, I haven't paid too much attention to what's going on in other countries lately, but I know that some European countries consider their jazz, unrelated to the jazz that's presented here. And it seems that I accept that because we seemingly are becoming more global, and that means that jazz has spread out into a global sense. And even within the sports world, now you have star basketball players from Asia. You have boxing people from Russia and Germany. So things are shifting and turning around a bit. And I think in all, that's good because I firmly believe in the oneness of humankind. And once it's established that all of us are one and the same, the stereotyping will begin to erase itself from our vocabulary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, it's been so beautiful speaking with you today, Mr. Richard, and we're going to let you get back to your dinner because we pulled you away from it.
Well, thank you so much. And also, when you send me the tape, send me a picture of yourself so I can see who I was talking to.
My friend, I will certainly do that. We're speaking with Richard Davis today on Live with the Jazz Cat on 1410 AM KRML Jazz and Blues Radio. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely, sir.
Good night.
Thank you, gentlemen. And that is another wrap on the Live with the Jazz Cat show. But you don't have to stop right there. You can go right to his website and download a number or listen to a number of the archived interviews. And they are stellar, just like this one. It's always, to me, very interesting to get the insight and the insightful individual, the jazz artist. Undoubtedly, to me, and I may be a little bit prejudiced in this, really the most intelligent individual in the world. It's always amazing to me that when you look at the Tonight Show bands or the or Conan or any of the top bands on television, they always use jazz musicians. I wonder why. Think about it. And we'll play a little bit of the album Madison, and I believe that's probably because Mr. Richard Davis lives in Madison, Wisconsin. Recorded in October of 2007, the album called Madison, Richard Davis on bass.